This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
I think we've got it nailed down. Paul Moyer will join us at 5 o'clock.
About that.
5 o'clock, Paul Moyer will be with us. So stay tuned for that conversation. We do that every week. Always a fun conversation. Coming up at 4 o'clock, we'll talk to the TV voice of the Guardians, who the Mariners will open the season with. A four-game series with the Cleveland Guardians. In fact, our buddy, I think Larry Stone, picked them to win the World Series.
Cleveland.
Yeah, the Times had their guys, Adam Jude, Ryan Divish, Larry Stone, and maybe Matt Calkins, I think. They all did their predictions for, you know, AL champ, NL champ, MVP, Cy Young, and who's going to win the World Series.
What's the matter with Larry Stone?
You said Guardians. Yeah.
What's the matter with him?
Well, I will say that none of them picked the Mariners. So yeah. if that's what you're angling toward, Dave.
Well, look, the Guardians, I mean, they took Tampa Bay in two games, right? And then they lost to the Yankees.
They've already got problems, though. The guy, Tristan McKenzie, right? Yeah, he was going to pitch game two of this series. He's already injured. So
don't even say that. I mean, that would just be such a bummer if it was, Robbie Ray. I won't even say their names.
Yeah, don't do it, Dave. Don't jinx them.
But they had a similar, kind of path in the playoffs. I mean, they swept Tampa Bay, just like Seattle did. And then, they lost, they lost 3-2 to the Yankees, but whereas the Astros swept the Mariners, which doesn't feel like that. It didn't really feel like that.
Yeah, we don't need to relive that.
All right.
So back to the Seahawks for a moment. Now, they've made moves in free agency. We were just talking about they bring in Bobby Wagner. They bring in Devin Bush. They brought in Julian Love. Draymond Jones on the D-line, along with Jaron Reed coming back. Obviously re-signing Geno and Drew Locke. What's left for him to do? Do you feel like, all right, we've addressed the needs you need to address in free agency. Now the rest will be filled in with draft picks. Or do you feel like there's still a pressing need that has yet to be addressed?
Center.
Evan Brown. They brought him in.
Yeah.
And Kyle Fuller signed. Where did he sign?
But Evan Brown.
Elsewhere. I don't know. That news also broke. I think we were fine.
Yeah, Kyle Fuller signed a deal elsewhere. I can't remember which team. So he's gone. Yeah. But Evan Brown, they signed at center. Left him off the list.
Yeah, I remember that. But still, I'm like, maybe that's somebody you draft. You know, if you have some. Because he was one of those guys that he got pushed because of, is it Ragnow? Yeah, the center for the Detroit. And so he got pushed to guard. So what would Ray Roberts say? He doesn't have a PhD at center. So, maybe that's the case. But yeah, they address linebacker, obviously. And, it's funny how that goes. First of all, that you get Draymond Jones, then Jaron Reed, it's kind of a slow trickle.
And that felt like the most pressing need. So you make two acquisitions there to address it. Doesn't mean they're done, but it feels like in terms of the experience and proven commodities, they've brought them in, and now we can fill it in with draft picks. Maybe there'll still be some free agents of lesser name or what have you that they'll bring on. But then it felt like, all right, you address the D-line. Linebacker really is thin because Ben Burkervin's gone. Cody Barton is gone. So you're left with an injured, Jordan Brooks. Right. Well, then they signed Devin Bush. They signed Bobby Wagner to come back. Hopefully Brooks will be back sooner than we expect, hopefully, and we'll see what goes on there. Safety, I didn't feel like was a pressing need, but they make the offer to Ryan Neal, so he'll be back. You got Quandre Diggs. Hopefully Jamal Adams will be back healthy. But then you got kind of insurance. I don't know. Is Julian Love, that's expensive insurance. I guess I don't look at that as insurance because that's more than the 1 year, hey, we're just going to take a flyer on this guy and see what happens deal.
I think he's going to play a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what they're expecting from him. So, and really, I mean, you can kind of put that into the linebacker mix, right?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, pretty much, it's pretty rare that you have regular personnel out on the field. I mean, typically you have an extra defensive back, one less linebacker. So, yeah, I mean, I think you addressed that. Julian Love is some of the film that I've looked at on him is kind of like what you see from Jamal Adams when they're playing him the right way. He's up on the line. He's, kind of playing like a linebacker. So, yeah, I mean, I didn't see him take on a lot of blocks, but he's physical. Mm-hmm. And, I think he called himself the silent assassin. So, but all of a sudden you start filling in with the, some of the draft choices, and And by the way, you know, we haven't talked about some of the guys like Boye Mafe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of these guys from last year's draft that will be going into year two. It, all of a sudden, Daryl Taylor. I mean, I think
Who's our guy that didn't play? Tyreek Smith?
Yeah, Tyreek Smith. That's right. Yeah, forgot about him. He was, I think he's number 92. Hopefully that doesn't jinx him.
Hopefully he's better than the 92 the Mariners had up on the mound named Wyman.
Poor guy.
There's a Wyman on number 92 for the Mariners out there getting his tail kicked, by God.
But, I mean, look, I don't know. Are they done adding people in free agency? I mean, I don't know, maybe one or two there, always at the cut-down date, which is going to be hectic this time of year. They bring a couple of guys in. You know, I was watching also the NFL Network this morning. I was talking about they were talking about Marquise Goodwin in Cleveland. And, you know, I was like, I forgot about that. That guy was, you know, so that maybe receiver is kind of an interesting one. I mean, you just think Tyler and DK, done, right?
Yeah.
Set. Good to go, but you know, maybe they get a number three guy, or you know, maybe tight end, you know, Will Disley. We'll find out what happens to him. You like Noah Fant, but yeah, I feel like they're on schedule. You know, every year you look back and go, oh well, we signed Bennett and we signed Averill, and then we got this guy and we got that. Well, that all happened spaced out over, you know, a 3-4 month period, and it didn't feel like that at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, you look back now and go, I don't know. I mean, do you feel if Jared Reed plays his best football? If this Dre Jones guy is who we think he is, you know, if Devin Bush, I don't want to say plays up to his first round again, I don't want to put that kind of pressure on him, but he's solid, you know. Bobby plays the way we described earlier, where not necessarily taking every single rep, but, you know, using him the right way. I feel like the defense at least, and I don't know if it's a huge improvement, but I feel like it got a little bit better.
I definitely think it got better on the line. The defensive line. I have a level of optimism about that. Linebackers, we'll see. I haven't watched a lot of Devin Bush. You look at the draft position, and yeah, there's a different expectation. We know what Bobby can do, what he's still capable of doing. We'll find out. The one I'm most excited about, honestly, is what we talked about earlier. The idea that they're going to use these three safeties and they're going to use Jamal the way they did the first year he was here, because, I mean, how do you not love who he was? I don't know how you couldn't be excited about the impact he had that year. And if that's what the acquisition of Julian Love does, to me, that is a massive boost for the defense. I mean, that's huge. And then along with the maturation of Boye Mafe and Daryl Taylor, these guys hopefully take that next step, get better, and you bring in some draft picks, maybe Tyreek Smith, a guy we don't even think about. So just, I think there's a ton of possibility. It obviously, everything has to go right, but I feel so much better about the defense right now, and they haven't even had their draft yet. Maybe they spend that number five pick on, maybe it's Jalen Carter, maybe it's Tyree Wilson. I don't know. We'll see what it is, what that pick ends up being. But I just feel like defensively, in terms of personnel, they're in a very good spot right now. I'm very optimistic about that defense. And now you go, all right, well, so now what's the biggest need? And you guys can text in right now, 866-979-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. What's the Seahawks' biggest need now in light of all of these signings? Is it that third receiver? We talked about, you know, just looking at all these mock drafts, and a name that was, you know, pretty consistently coming up with the Seahawks' second first-round pick, which is at number 20, was the receiver out of Ohio State, Jaxon Smith-Njigba. Paul Keels, who's their play-by-play guy, talked about his game-changing ability.
Based on what we saw in the previous year, especially the Rose Bowl game he had against Utah, and again, that's pairing him with C.J. Stroud, certainly a game-changing type of wide receiver, a guy that really created headaches for opposing defensive coordinators when he first started playing. And I remember this first game he played at Ohio State. It was the pandemic year. They opened in the abbreviated season later than normal at home against Nebraska, and he made a touchdown catch with a toe tap on the back line of the end zone that was just a thing of beauty to watch. And the kind of play that not many football players can make. So he's a guy, if healthy and when healthy, he can be a game-changing type of wide receiver.
Kind of interesting. I don't know where the Seahawks have wide receiver on their depth, you know, on their priority list. If they would spend a first-round pick on a receiver, they've not done it with Pete and John at the helm, as we've talked about. So would this be a year they would do it, considering that's not their first pick in the first round? They've got number five to work with.
Yeah, I think that maybe to a certain extent, we're forgetting that they're going to take the best football player, regardless of, you know, of position.
So kicker.
Yeah. I mean, look, yeah, kickers are, I mean, they score lots of points, Bob. But yeah, I mean, if that's the case for him, and they just think he's a really good player that can maybe, you know, at some point replace Tyler Lockett, who's getting on in years. He's not that old, though. I mean, he's still,
his production is right where it's been.
It's been phenomenal. Yeah.
I think we just look at him, well, he's been here the longest, so at some point he's going to retire. And,
yeah,
you know, but yeah, there's no urgency to replace Tyler Lockett right now. He's still wildly productive. He's exactly who he's been. He doesn't miss time. So, yeah, it just feels like, you know, maybe if you're planning for the future, that could be maybe 3 years from now, we're having a different conversation about Tyler. But right now, this guy gets to be your third receiver and learn and sit behind Tyler and DK. And
well, interesting, though, if you still had Russell Wilson, would you be like, yeah, absolutely, we'll take him because we need to get him more targets. You know, mm-hmm. He's a MVP caliber player. And, you know, so, you know, I could see that. I could see John at the end of the draft, you know, drafting Njigba and then saying, this guy's an unbelievable player. I mean, and he's an incredible weapon. And really, I mean, to have the number three guy, I mean, that's something that we've kind of, what has it been, Freddie Swain, as far as receivers.
Yeah.
You know, not tight ends. I mean, if you, and you're not so super confident about Will Dissly, that knee injury seems kind of weird. I think Noah Fant is a really good player, but I don't, he's not like a dynamic runner after he catches mm-hmm. the ball or anything like that.
Just kind of solid.
Seems to be open a lot. Yeah. There's something about him. So anyway, yeah, that's kind of interesting. You know, you were talking about Jamal Adams and him, and, you know, even in 2020, that's, and I'm going to be, this is negative, but he played three games and then he got hurt. Mm-hmm. Remember, he missed Miami. He missed Minnesota. He missed Arizona. He missed San Francisco. He comes back right after that and gets a sack and a half. The first week against Buffalo, and then two sacks against the Rams and a couple of losses that they had. But, you know, he really has had, you know, he's injury prone. That's just the way it is.
Since he's been here. Look at the games missed prior to coming to Seattle.
Yeah, it's only a few.
That was not his story. He was not, you didn't bring in a guy who's got that reputation and see you should have known better kind of situation. Then I would be going, oh, man, that was really a mistake. They bet on a guy who you can't bet on. He's just not available. That was far from his story coming here. So it's unfortunate. The timing stinks. He gets the big deal, and he's hardly been available. But I don't feel like he brought in damaged goods where you were like, hey, we're going for it. We're taking a chance on this guy that he's going to get more durable. That wasn't what was happening. But unfortunately, that's his story now.
Yeah, he missed two games in 3 years. So, but yeah, the receiver position, I think we do kind of. I think as fans, you get more hung up on what do they need.
Yeah.
Whereas I think Schneider and his crew, it's more about we're going to get the best football player available. And I think that's something that they say every time. It's just kind of nice when it lines up, right? It's something you need, and they happen to think that that's the best. But, you know, I mean, look, that may also be a reason why they trade back is because they think they can get maybe a center later on or something like that. But, yeah, this one's going to be really interesting, especially getting to talk to John and sort of pick his brain every week. You know, he's not going to tell us a whole lot, but afterwards, you know, what are the reasons? Him and I meet after every draft, and he's nice enough to, like, explain, this is what we did, this is what we were thinking, this is what happened, and it's really cool to see the whole thing come together.
Yeah, looking forward to talking to him and just and then after the draft saying, why didn't you tell us this? How come you didn't tell us you were going to do that? You could have given us a little tip off here. But
well, remember what, you know, he was complaining that Scott Fitter, he was like, yeah, you didn't even tell me anything. Yeah. I didn't know you were going to do that.
See, we got to tell him, don't be like Scott. Be better than Scott, John. Better than Scott. Let's bring us into the loop here. Hey, in memory of our friend John Clayton, in support of his wife Pat, Seattle Sports is honored to take part in the 2023 Walk MS Seattle on Sunday, April 23rd at Gasworks Park. So you can join our team or you can donate to this great cause by visiting seattlesports.com/events and clicking the Walk MS link. So it's right there for you. Either way, you want to come out, be part of the team, or you just want to donate. Either way, it's all done in memory of, again, our dear friend John Clayton and his wife, Pat. Go to seattlesports.com/events and click the Walk MS link. It's right there for you.
I think Clayton would probably be breaking down the walkers.
Yeah.
Yeah, this guy's had a chance to win here. I mean, you look at that. You know, I mean, he's got the lower body there, a little bit thick there. He's got the calves.
He's got a nice stride. I like his gait coming out of there. He looks good there. Yeah, that would be great to hear him break down all the walkers. We've been talking about yesterday. We had a bunch of different power rankings, you know, for baseball, like the, you know, opening day power rankings and the, you know, 2023 World Series draft they did. We went through all of these. And, you know, I was looking at this last night, just thinking about Scott Servais and managers. He's been in he's been a finalist for Manager of the Year the past two seasons, deservedly so. Especially the first year when he should have won. I don't know what happened to the voters out there, John Morosi.
Well, JP was part of it.
Oh, I just don't get it.
I'm going to fire that back at him when if he says something about my waiting the games being longer.
We could play his Are You Serious clip if he says he doesn't want to vote for Scott Servais as Manager of the Year.
Yeah, seriously.
Are you being serious with me?
Yeah. But this is a guy, again, the first year was the one that really blew me away. Because he had so little to work with and his rotation fell apart out of the gate and all the injuries, and somehow that turns into 90, and then we're all looking at it going, that's great, but can they do that again? You had that run differential that was really skewed the wrong direction, and that doesn't give you a good feeling going into the next season. Well, they did it again, and they got to the playoffs, and they win a playoff series. Is he one of the better managers in baseball? Is he getting the proper amount of respect? If we were doing a managerial power ranking, wouldn't he, at minimum, be a top 10 manager in baseball, at minimum?
God, you would think so, right? Well, and also, do they have GM of the year? I mean, I guess...
Not that I'm aware of. If they have it, it's not one they make a big deal of promoting.
Because Justin Hollander and, you know, / Jerry DePoto have done a phenomenal job. But, you know, and I would say the coordination between those two, you know, it's like Pete and John. I mean, you know, you're giving them the players, but... Yeah, I mean, Scott has just been incredible. Of number one, I think the one thing that makes it easy is describing what the culture is. Like, guys are coming in from different teams and, you know, coming up through the ranks as far as the, you know, the minor leagues. And I think he sets the path very clear. Like, this is the kind of clubhouse that we want. And, you know, and whether it's that or managing players and, you know, getting them back on time and resting them and things like that. I mean, that's all part of it. And it just seems like he does a phenomenal job. And especially now where you've got a lot to work with. You know,
this is the most he's had to work with.
Right.
Yeah. So he's got more tools at his disposal now than he's had. That's why I thought that first year, the first 91 year, he was hands down the guy. I mean, look at what he achieved with what he had to work with. It wasn't even close to what the other guys were doing. I mean, come on, man.
Was that the year where they had all the injuries? They had like 58.
24 pitches. Paxton, done.
Yeah.
Season. That was your big off-season acquisition for your rotation. He's done after 24 pitches, and everybody in that rotation got hurt except for Flexen. Right. It was Justin Dunn got hurt and Sheffield got hurt and everybody got hurt and they were taping it together. He pulled this thing out of the fire when they had the Kendall Graveman trade. I mean, guys were pissed.
Yeah,
that's where a manager's got to step up and go, all right, how do I right this ship? Because it wasn't one guy. It wasn't two guys. There were a lot of guys in there that were pissed and that could have gone the wrong way. And he pulled that one out. I mean, they were 10 games under .500 in June last year. They end up winning 90 games. Somehow he's able to right the ship. He's not doing it alone. I'm not giving him all the credit, but, man, I don't know if he gets enough credit. And I feel like if you did a managerial power ranking or something along the lines of what we've been talking about the past couple of days, he's got to be at minimum a top 10 manager. And it almost feels like it's kind of a Pete thing. We've talked about, is Pete ever going to get consideration for coach of the year? I mean, he's, you know, people looked at Pete and said, well, anybody could do that because he's got all that talent. All right. Well, you can't say that for Scott. You can say it more so now. He's got much more talent to work with. You couldn't say it that first 91 year by any stretch, and he did it. So it's not like, well, anybody could achieve what he did. Look at what he's got to work with. It was completely opposite.
Well, I think you're right about that. The only problem is with, and it seems to, you know, whether it's football or baseball, it takes a couple of years. It takes a couple of years of his name being in the hat and being considered. And then, and a lot of times those guys will, you know, because who won it that year?
Tampa
years
Bay.
Tampa. Cashman?
Who got it last year?
It was Francona.
Last year I didn't have
the youngest team in baseball.
Yeah, I didn't have
the playoffs.
Last year I didn't have a huge problem with it. Yeah. I thought Francona did a great tremendous job. The year before, should have been Scott. Sorry, should have been Scott.
Yeah. Who was the manager? Was that right? Was the from Tampa that won it?
Kevin Cash.
Yeah.
Kevin Cash.
Cash.
And then I call Dusty, him Cashman.
Dusty Baker, I believe, was second that year.
Yeah. But, you know, that I feel like that was the year he probably deserved it. But, okay, his name's in the hat, like I said, and then, you know, last year. So hopefully this year. It seems like it's always like a year or two late.
So he'll win it in a year when we go, this wasn't his best year. It was a great year, not his best.
Well, it happens all the time with the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, no, you're right.
You'll have guys, I remember Junior Seau would always, you know, I'm like, yeah, he had an okay year, but he wasn't that great. And I was like, well, you know, when it comes to the voting, everybody's like, yeah, Junior Seau, he's made it the last two, 3 years. Let's throw him in there. Not that he wasn't a good player. It's just that it has a tendency. And then, you know, you see these other players that are playing their tail off, but nobody knows him. And so it takes them a couple of years. Like KJ, he finally made the Pro Bowl. He should have made it, you know, 2 years before that.
Yeah.
So it's just the rate, I don't know, the voting and the ranking and everything just kind of gets, it takes a while for people to catch up. So hopefully this year for Scott.
All right, coming up, have the Mariners addressed all of their weaknesses in this lineup? One guy has a surprising answer. You're going to hear it next with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
We are fired up for Mariners opening day happening tomorrow. So it's opening day eve. And already people out at the ballpark. I'm pretty sure they're all going to spend the night out there because they're that excited, Dave.
Yeah, so what was the, it was like a skills thing? People run it, get to run the bases or something
Well,
like
I think the Mariner players are doing something out there.
Oh.
And people are going just to watch.
Hey, if you're, they're just going to watch. I thought people were going to be out there. So I'm like, don't run into somebody, you know, or trip Ty France and twist his ankle or something.
Yeah, they're not going to let those maniacs out on the pristine field before opening day. Well, they're going to say, don't touch it.
Oh,
don't
you're
even
right.
look at it. Don't
I
even
mean,
look at it.
The groundskeepers, they'd be like. But when we saw, we talked to Ty France about all the people that were allowed to go during spring training and shag flies. And he's like, the one guy got hit in the shoulder. He's not looking too good.
I remember asking him, did he go down? He goes, no, but he was leaning on the fence.
But he was just shaking his head like, somebody's going to get hurt out there.
Well, they had some older fellas out there.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I saw one guy who looked like he might have been 70s, wearing baseball pants, had the full gear on.
Oh, no, that was Ichiro.
Was that? No, he's almost 50. He's almost 50, Ichiro, and in better shape than probably any almost 50-year-old you've ever met.
Oh, my God.
But, yeah, it was kind of interesting seeing that out there. But, no, I think these are people watching Mariner players go through some things out there and just building that anticipation. But just looking at the Mariners lineup, what are your concerns? Do you have any concerns when you look at the lineup or look at the position, like third, second base, shortstop, whatever? Is there something you're looking at going, I'm not so sure about that?
Well, I guess how things work out for Colton Wong, does he have a bounce back year of his 17-error season? That one kind of, you know, him and I guess JP. I mean, and I think JP's a great player, and you hear all the time, I was talking to Kyle, our program director, about this, that, you know, like he's usually the guy that's on top of anything that, as far as a leader in that clubhouse, which is kind of interesting. And he's not super, you know, doesn't care to do media stuff very often. We don't know that much about him, and I feel like we hear from all the other guys. We don't hear for that much from JP, which is fine. That's okay. Some guys aren't that guy, but you know, it's not like I'm concerned because I think that he's going to have a bad year. I kind of worry a little bit about him and at that position. And I just hope that he has the kind of year. So, yeah, I mean, now that you ask me that, it's, you know, shortstop.
Yeah. Because I think that's fair. It's not a personal thing. Everybody loves him, but. And we've seen him play really, really well there. He won a gold glove. I mean, he's played outstanding defense. He's not a power guy. He's never been a big run producer, but he's just a guy you need to get on base. Just get him on there, and hopefully Julio will be driving him in, and Ty France will be driving him in. Just have him be that guy. He's not a stolen base threat. Maybe takes the smallest lead off first base I've ever seen for a guy who's not, you know, 300 pounds. It's interesting. Watch him this year. Watch what kind of lead he takes. It's minuscule. Yeah. I don't even know why they throw over. He doesn't attempt to steal bases, and he doesn't have a big lead. But anyway, you need him to be more than what he was last year. And I think he would say the same thing. It just was not a good year for him. The first month was great, and then the offense just went away. And then he dealt with some injuries, apparently, that we weren't that aware of. And I don't know where they cropped up, if it was immediately after April or if it was later. But he just didn't look to be the same player at the plate or in the field.
Well, the other thing is, what, the last guy that we ended up interviewing, which I thought was awesome. I like Jared Kelnick. I mean, mm-hmm. I know he's a different cat, but just the way he answered his questions, he's just a different guy. But should we be worrying about that because those were spring training numbers?
No, because I think we talked about this, about, you know, who really needs to step up in order for this team to take that next step. They won 90 games and won a playoff series without Kelnick contributing.
Consistently.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he was up, he was down, he never really got hot at the plate. So, and you know what? They did it without JP being JP. So they've shown they can do it without those guys. They make life a lot easier if they're playing better, if they're contributing, especially offensively. But is Kelnick going to be the key to making the playoffs or not making it? No, I don't. I feel like he could just make life so much easier and lengthen that lineup and make the team that much better if he's not a spot in the lineup you look at and go, well, all right, that's probably an out. Let's look at who's up after that. You know, if he can just be a guy who can be a threat and you know, show some pop. He doesn't have to hit 300. But just be a guy who's not that out that you're looking at. That goes a long way. And Jeff Passan, who was on with Brock and Salk, talked about Kelnick feeling like he feels like he's going to turn into a very productive big leaguer.
I'm also going to spend a lot of time watching Jared Kelnick this spring, I think. I think it's happening. Is he going to be the MVP-type candidate that when he was at his apex in terms of prospect status and hype that people thought he was going to be? Maybe not, but I think he's got a chance to be a very productive big league player. And when you add that into a lineup that has solid guys in Ty France and Colton Wong and Gino Suarez, and if J.P. Crawford can get back to the 21 version of himself, and Teoscar Hernandez is the epitome of solid, and then you have someone like Julio Rodriguez, who's just, you know, star of stars, that's a really good top-to-bottom lineup.
You know, I think the thing about Jared Kelnick, I'm going to sell Jared Kelnick right now, because I think that there's some people that, because of his personality, whatever, they think he's cocky or whatever. A couple of the things, so I asked him, I go, yeah, it's kind of an eighth-grade question, but are you the fastest guy on the team? You know, and he was like, oh, no.
How much can you bench?
Yeah, that was next, Bob. But, yeah, he was like, No, there's guys that are faster than me and everything. And then the other thing was, you know, I asked Murphy, who do you give the most crap to? Because that means that they're, you know, they accept, and you brought that up to him. And he's like, oh, really? Yeah, that's
cool. That was when he lit up, of all things.
Yeah.
Did he say that?
Yeah.
Like, whoa, what happened?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think people worry about him, you know, maybe, I don't know, his personality or something. They seem to love him. And then he showed, you know, a little bit of sort of, you know, humility there that, yeah, oh, there's guys faster than me. I know. I like the kid. I don't think I've ever heard anything from him in an interview that we've done that I didn't like. So I'm really excited about him. I think that's going to be, you know, if he's able to do, you know, replicate, we obviously don't expect him to bat 400 or whatever he was during the spring. But if he's a contributor and gives you some pop, especially at key moments, I mean, This guy is going to be, I think it, our, that was the thing we dreamed of in the offseason. If we can just get something out of Kelnick, that would mm-hmm. solve so many problems.
Well, you hit the most important part, and it's really the only part that matters, that they like him.
Yeah.
That his teammates like him,
yep.
And the manager likes him. Whether he's a great interview, a terrible interview, friendly, not friendly, means nothing. Yeah, yeah. It's great for us. We love talking to fun guys who like to laugh and are gregarious and light. He doesn't have to be that guy. Marco's not really that guy. Marco's got an intensity and an edge to him that he's certainly not unfriendly, but he's not a guy you sit there and, hey, buddy, joking around, and, you know, he's smiling. Like, he's got a really focused intensity to him. So, yeah. You know, everybody's different. I couldn't care less as long as the teammates like, as long as he's not a problem where they look at him in the clubhouse going, this guy.
Yeah,
this guy is bringing people down, or he doesn't fit. So, yeah, you're right. As long as they like him, that's truly all that matters. Just quickly back to JP. Jeff Passan was just talking about JP Crawford, not Jeff Passan, JP. But mm-hmm. he was talking about, you know, the potential weak link in his opinion is at shortstop.
If an upgrade happens to materialize, then yeah, they're not going to be averse to talking about it. But boy, we are. Is this not the era, fellas, that you have been wishing for, where we're like speculating on maybe the one area on the roster the Mariners mm-hmm. need to make an upgrade? Mm-hmm. I let's put it this way. I think if the Mariners wanted to make an upgrade at shortstop, they had ample opportunity to do it each of the last 2 years, and they chose not to. Now, maybe that's the right thing. Maybe that's the wrong thing. Time will tell. But I just don't think that's a priority for this club.
Yeah, so not their priority. They did make their commitment. JP's our guy. Sticking with it. We'll see how it works out this year. And hopefully this is a bounce back year for him, because he's huge to this team when he's got it going on. So,
but you know, everybody loves him, and you know he can do it.
Yep, we've seen him do it. All right, coming up, what if a key Seahawk didn't get injured last year? It is What If Wednesday. We'll answer that question coming up with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
What?
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 It's time for What If Wednesday.
Coach would have put me in fourth quarter. We'd have been state champions, no doubt.
Wyman and Bob rewrite the scripts of major moves and moments in sports every Wednesday afternoon. Now step into an alternative reality with Wyman and Bob.
Little programming note coming up at 4 o'clock. We will speak to the TV voice of the Cleveland Guardians. Matt Underwood will join us in about 15 minutes from now. So stay tuned for that as we preview the opening series for the 2023 season in your Seattle Mariners. That's coming your way. But it is What If Wednesday, which is presented by Mazda of Everett. Question is, Dave, what if Jamal Adams didn't get hurt last year? With the Seahawks, do you think they still would have signed Julian Love? They still would have had the idea of, hey, we want to go big nickel. We want to use him more as in that hybrid linebacker role? Or what do you think? Does it impact moves they've made?
Quick refresh. What did Julian Love sign for again?
I'm Two sorry. Years. Was it 12?
Yeah.
It something like along those lines.
Yeah, I think they probably still sign him, because if that's – and I hope this is the way that they're going. I shouldn't be saying that, because it means less linebackers on the field. But, yeah, I think they probably still would do that. I don't know that it's necessarily just because – Adams got hurt, but I don't think you do him and Ryan Neal, though. Maybe you let Ryan Neal go if Jamal didn't get hurt. But I think that it's the safety position is very important. It's important that you have that in this defense. It just seems to make it work. I feel like Pete being an old safety himself and coaching safeties, and like it's really a key. And Moyer will tell you that they're the most important people on the field, because Paul was one. But I mean, look, every year, you know, our free safety, Eugene Robinson, would beat me by one or two tackles to be the, you know, leading tackler. And I always hated him for that. No, I love Gene. But, you know, him and Moyer and Kenny Easley. I mean, safeties, it's a really important position. So, yeah, the fact that if you put three out there on the field, I think that'll work. And, you know, but I think probably you don't sign Ryan Neal if Jamal Adams didn't get hurt. That would be my guess.
I think Neal only cost, barely over $2 million for that offer, the qualifying offer they made him.
Yeah, well, and you see a lot of guys like that they let go, that like you could have got that guy back for pretty cheap.
Yeah.
You know, but they don't. You know, they don't feel like they need him, and $2 million is $2 million. I mean, to the guy who runs the salary cap, who shall not be named, he would be like, that's like $200 million to me. $2 million? Yeah, so, I mean, look, you can always find ways to save and cut, but, yeah, that would be my what-if prediction. What do you think?
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. I kind of feel like they'd bring Ryan back anyway. I just feel like he's got, for the price tag on him, he is more than worth having on the roster, just because that's the insurance. I don't think Julian loves the insurance.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The people are texting in. I think they signed him for insurance if Adams gets hurt. Nah, maybe there's that luxury, but I think the financial commitment to him tells me something else. You know, sort of like Draymond Jones. It's not the 1 year flyer on a guy. It's not the 1 year Bobby Wagner $7 million deal. And that's not a shot at Bobby. I just think you see the intention is different when it's a multi-year deal for that level of money. So I think, you know, I'm just really excited about the idea they're going to bring him back to what he did this first year here, because I just, man, I fell in love with him as a player. Just going, this guy is everywhere. He was a heat-seeking missile. He was everywhere, and he was impactful, and it was awesome. And then they did what they did the next year, and I don't know why, but, you know, so the possibility of that being more of what we see moving forward, as long as he's physically capable, which hopefully he will be, that's really exciting because I think that just brings such a different element and attitude to this defense. And if you're an offensive coordinator, he almost, I don't know, would that be an extra meeting guy? If he's back to that form, maybe he's not getting 9.5 sack, maybe he's getting 7. Maybe he's around, still, I feel like he would be that guy.
He would be the extra meeting guy, and I'm surprised we didn't mention that the first time we were talking about him, because, look, that's a guy who can, look, he can cover. You know, people are like, oh, his hands are terrible. Okay, maybe that's the case, but, and maybe I'm just justifying it because I also had frying pan hands, just couldn't, caught everything in high school and college, had one-handed interceptions, the whole thing, got in the NFL, couldn't catch anything. But yeah, I think he's the extra meeting guy, and not only does he make plays, you know, we talked about the 9.5 sacks, but also he just always does right is the one thing I noticed, like, especially that first game against Atlanta, they tried to run the fly sweep on him, and he just was very diligent about staying outside and taking on the block and turning it back inside. And he made a lot of plays. He really understands the run game.
Yeah.
Defensively, he's very good. And, you know, I talk about sifters. Like, what that means is, you know, when there's a pile, it's not your gap or whatever, but you're sifting through blockers. Mm-hmm. Devin Bush has a really good sense for that. Jamal Adams, like, superior. Like, he will, you know, he'll hit somebody if he has to, but he'll sift through really well and not touch anyone, because really the point is to tackle the ball carrier, not to hit the guard, but if you can get away with it. And now, you know, once the gaps break down and it's a big, you know, mishmash in the middle of the field, like, Jamal Adams is like a heat-seeking missile.
Just how awesome. Different would the defense have been last year had he been healthy all year? Or was it just too problematic up front that it might not have made that big of a difference?
Yeah, I mean, it would have made some difference, but yeah, they had lots of things that were just broken, you know. And I think about, like, the Raider game, the game against Tampa, you know, those two were like
the Rams.
It wasn't any one guy. It was like, there's only 6 guys for 7 gaps, or, you know, these guys aren't attacking the double team for some reason. So I think it was just broken. But, you know, I think Jamal probably would have been pretty frustrated.
He would have been like Quandre out there, palms up, like, what the hell's happening?
Yeah.
What are we doing here?
Well, and again, those guys, especially when you're lined up deep like Quandre, they're relying on everybody else to do their job quickly. And then, you know, the timing, it throws the timing off. So now you put, and if anybody thought that Quandre Diggs, I mean, I'm not saying he was perfect, but a lot of the things that where Quandre had a missed tackle or a bad play, it was just because I don't think he knew where to go, because nobody was committing to anything in front of them, particularly in the run game.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hopefully we're talking about a bounce back here for Jamal Adams. That would be much like Kelnick, if he were all of a sudden able to be a contributor on offense, and just how much impact that has on the lineup. I think a healthy Jamal Adams has a huge impact on this defense.
Solves lots of problems.
Yes. It would be really fun to watch. All right, coming up, the Mariners season begins tomorrow. We're going to learn more about their opponent from Cleveland play-by-play man Matt Underwood. He's going to join us next here with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.